Hello, viewers and listeners. This is your co-host, Stu, and I am here with the paranormalist and ghost lady of PA, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing fine, honey. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. Thanks for asking.
Sun's out this evening. It's really pretty. I'm excited.
It's cold as blank.
It's a whole 25 degrees. What have we got to complain about?
That's Fahrenheit for you viewers and listeners in other countries. So.
Yes. So today I wanted to talk about something that actually started out this morning not being our episode, and that's curses. What happened is at 8 o'clock this morning, a friend of mine texted me and she said, I think I need your help. A mutual friend of ours was working in the Gettysburg area, and they were doing a case together for something. And during the investigation, all of a sudden, the energy just kind of changed, and, you know, it was like a normal haunted house, kind of right. Just, you know, it was a group of people doing an investigation under the purview of my friends, and all of a sudden, the energy got really dark and really negative, and they actually, one of the young men who's been on multiple investigations with various groups of our teams, literally ran out of the building. And he had never had this experience before. He said he saw something dark. It was like a dark, large animal in the basement of this house with red eyes. And it was moving and undulating and spiritual. And the house has nothing history-wise to justify this. And it's been a place that people have publicly ghost hunted many times. Never had this encounter. And then through a spirit that was there, they very quickly got the word that everybody needed to leave the house, that there was something had happened to one of the investigators. Something had been attached and it was negative. Well, it very quickly, they gave a name, and it was a person who dislikes my friend and is jealous of her for her success at her business. So this happened late last night, and our mutual friend decided to wait till morning to give me a call. And so I reached out immediately and I said, what's up? Found out all this information and began working to make things better for our friend, because, you know, obviously she's in a bad place. In fact, there was the house she lives in is haunted, and the spirit that's there wouldn't leave the doorway of her bedroom. It was guarding her all night.
Wow.
So it was very agitated and very upset and very concerned about what was going on. And to make it as clear as I can, I'm trying to not have anybody's names involved, but to make it as clear as I can, the person who disliked my friend and her and a group of her friends have been working to actively send nasty spirits cursing her to make her life miserable. This is the second time I've had this experience in the last 6 months. So immediately when things started getting all messed up and hot, my friend said, you know, I think you need to call Patty. We need to talk to her. So as soon as our mutual friend got up, she gave me a text message, realized I was awake, and she called me right away, kind of filled me in. We got a hold of the lady who's got was cursed, basically, and started with that. And we worked through that this morning. So between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, that's what I was doing. Still in my nightgown.
Wow.
So that got me to thinking about how people don't realize how easy curses are and how words have meaning. So this particular person, because of her envy and her greed, she has been evoking through words these curses that are attaching to this young woman. And people don't understand how important words are. Words are not sounds that you make. They're not just sounds that you make. Words have a meaning, and they carry through into the spiritual realm as well as into our psychological realm. and they can actually cause things to attach to us as curses that can follow us throughout our life and can follow our families generationally. So I thought we really haven't talked a lot about curses, and yet it is something that's much more prevalent than people realize. Now, back in the early 1900s, people still believed in curses, and they were science, quote unquote, made it become superstition. But whether you like it or you don't like it, that's fine. But the truth of the matter is there are multiple types of curses, and they are effective, and they're all attached the same way through the spoken word and intent. That's how curses are attached to every person. You're never going to hear of a curse where it was attached in any other way. It's always spoken word and intent. So our words have a lot of meaning, and we don't realize it. I was sitting there after we were done with this morning and thinking about that, and thinking about how our world is filled with meaningless chatter today.
Correct. Yes.
You know, through the internet, social media, all of that. Mm-hmm. And yet there's an underlying negative thread that goes through a great deal of it. And those words do have a meaning. Maybe you're not thinking about them, but your words have a meaning that touches us psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. And so it goes into the paranormal. And I'm hoping that as we go through this episode, people will see how important it is. One of the very first things we learn from what is probably our primary historical document. I'm not saying this. I'm saying that our historians and philosophers and people around the world who will say this. The first book, if you will, is the Bible. And the first thing that the Bible says is God spoke the planet into being. He used words. He spoke it into being. And we can speak things into being as well. There are an inordinate amount of passages in the Bible that warn you about this. The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit, Proverbs. I could go down. There are literally a couple hundred times throughout the Bible that you are warned that your words have meaning. Not only that they have meaning, but that you will be held to account for them, for what you said and the intent of what you said and what it did to other people at some point. If you believe in karma or you believe in a judgment of any sort, then that is what it means. So I wanted to talk a little bit about it and how important it is. So our words carry a supernatural power to bless or to curse. We pray over people aloud. The words are spoken. We praise people aloud. The words must be spoken. You can't just sit there and think, oh, you're really, really doing great. I'm very proud of you. It doesn't do any good. Just like you couldn't sit there and think, I really don't like you. I wish the worst for you. And it didn't do any good. It is the sound of the words that make difference. So they carry a supernatural element, just like music carries a supernatural element, and it gets to us on so many levels. I'll go with a very basic one. So you have a child and the child does something wrong and you scream, I can't believe you did that. That's so freaking stupid. You're just dumb. What a terrible thing to say on a psychological level.
Oh, if I could, I can't count the number of times as a young child that, yeah, my father called me dumb kid.
And it left scars that carried on, I'm sure, to this day. There's a little twinge even to this day, I'm sure, when you hear something like that or you hear somebody say something like that. It brings that balance.
Yeah, I certainly had to censure my eulogy.
Sure. And that, believe it or not, is close to being a verbal curse. It's worse to say that to a person from a spiritual and a psychological perspective than it is to just cuss at them, because it literally damages them. It damages the energy of their soul. And that's really difficult to heal from. It's hurtful in ways you can't imagine. It influences the direction of your perspective and how you're going to live your life, maybe the things you're willing to try to do, maybe the goals you're willing to set for yourself. It's a weapon. You can either chain people with it or you can break those chains. And I've done enough blessings. I've done enough helping people with curses and things of that nature throughout my lifetime to realize how much bondage you can give to a person if you just say it with vehemence and mean it. Because it really does. So the spiritual impact, words are not simply caused by our mouths and the air passing through. Humans are made in God's image, and our words have a power. He imbued us with attributes of His. And one of those things He gave us is the ability to speak things into being. And it's important to know that.
Conversely, can you also speak them out of being? And I just wondered how you went to mitigate the issue with your friend's friend.
We're going to get into that. So okay. Mm-hmm. You can speak things out of being, and that's important to know. So that's, you know, that is one of the things we're going to talk about. So I wanted to talk about, first of all, the different types of curses there are. You can curse yourself, believe it or not. It happens to people all the time. I'll give you a couple biblical examples first, because those are probably the most well-known ones. So Adam cursed himself by his actions. By not listening to that prohibition, he was banished. He was cursed to never, ever be able to again live in the Garden of Eden in perfect harmony with the Spirit of God. Eve cursed herself by manipulating her husband. And that curse for her was, not only was she banished and could not interact directly with God any longer, but he also cursed her with painful childbirth. You can go down further. Cain cursed himself because of his jealousy. So people don't realize that when you're jealous and you're hateful and you're reaching that poison out to other people, you also are internalizing it. And so it goes out to others. And, you know, Cain killed Abel. He took a life out of jealousy, and he cursed himself in the process. So he lost his ability to be able to be a part of his community, of his spiritual community, as well as his physical community. He was driven out. There are so many stories of this that people have talked about. Another form of this might be anybody who's ever worked in the theater, you know that there's the name of a particular Shakespearean play that you're not supposed to say in the theater. So I'm not in the theater, so I'll say it. So it's Macbeth. And there is a story about why that is so. I don't know if you know why that is so. So according to the lore, Shakespeare, when he wrote that play, of course, it has the character of the weird sisters, the three witches. And there are curses and there are conjurings that are done in that. Thrice the blinded cat hath mewed, thrice and once the hedge pig whined, Hapia cries, 'tis time, 'tis time. That's part of calling up the dead. That's part of a ritual for that. He used actual rituals. And so anybody who mentions the word before the performance will end up kind of cursing themselves to have a terrible performance. And they know that over the course of time. But actually, he did actually use what were considered curses and incantations of that time period. And then here's one that people don't often think about, but it is one I've encountered on multiple occasions. So you go to some place and you pick up an item as a souvenir. For example, there are so many stories about Devil's Den. You take a rock, little tiny rock from Devil's Den. Nobody's going to miss it. It's nothing but rock. And you go home and all of a sudden your luck suddenly changes and everything just seems to go bad. And it's thing after thing. You get sick, you lose your job, your bank account gets hacked. It's just over and over and over again, all in like a few weeks' time. And suddenly you think, I wonder what is causing it. And you think, well, you know, that all happened after my trip to Gettysburg. I have a good friend who lives in Gettysburg, who's an author and historian, and he has over the years gotten more rocks back with letters attached to them saying, please take this back. I picked it up at Devil's Den, you know, and trying to give a description of where. Put it back and please tell them I'm sorry. I just want the bad luck to end.
Does that work, or does the person that took the rock have to put it back themselves?
Well, he said he saves them up until he gets about half a little box, you know, because he's like, otherwise I'd be out there every day, you know, practically. And at some point, especially at the end of summer, because people come out on tour and tour the place for the summer. And, you know, and then they go home and a few months go by and about October, November-ish, the letters and the rocks start coming. And him and his wife will go out and they'll do a drive through and they'll stop and they'll put them back. He said he assumes they work because nobody ever contacts them again, but I don't know the answer to that. I would think because your intent is to return it and you're taking active steps to rectify what you did. There's a story that taking rocks from Devil's Den is will cause them to curse you or to make you have bad luck because so much blood was shed in that place. So many lives were lost. It's a sacred place. And although people were all thinking about the Confederate and Union soldiers who fought there, believe it or not, there was a huge Native American battle there years previous. My friend would go around collecting stories and what have you, and he would have people contact him and say, hey, I have a whole bunch of these, you know, the pellets from the mini balls, little circles of lead. And he would come to their houses and they would have like a little couple quart jars sitting on the counter for him to see with all this brickbac from the Civil War. But usually somewhere nearby was also a couple jars filled with arrowheads that they had found in the same spaces, because there was a huge, huge battle back before the whites were living there. And we know that from historical records, and we know that from the fact that farmers are still pulling up these arrowheads today. So it was a heavy duty battle. So obviously this is a place where there's some sort of sacredness going on. So it causes people to have bad luck. You get cursed by it. You're not going to get that to lift until you do something to change the situation. So they send the rocks back with a letter saying, please take this back. Please tell them I'm sorry. Please let them know that I want this to stop and I will never do it again. So he takes them back, he lays them down, and he said, here they are. These people are sorry for what they did, and they sent them to me to bring them back. So, you know, it is, and you'll hear that from other places as well. Like, I have a habit of not taking anything from a house whenever I'm working a case. So I won't even eat or drink in the house, which sometimes is very awkward because these very lovely people want to bring you, you know, whenever you come in, they've got sandwiches or they've ordered pizza or something. They want to show their appreciation because we don't charge to do what we do. And, you know, and they'll say, you know, I've ordered pizza for everybody after you're done. You know, I just wanted to let you know how much we appreciate your help. And I am so grateful for that. But I always have to tell them that I'm so sorry, but we can't take anything from their house. And I learned that from John Zaffis, actually. As an exorcist, he will never eat or drink anything in a house where he's doing an exorcism.
For fear something would be attached to whatever you're ingesting. Yeah.
Yes. So I bring my own bottles of water. I'm very cautious. I thank everybody for their offers of coffee, tea, soda, and food, but we just simply can't. They're usually pretty understanding about it when I explain it to them. Mm-hmm. But it's because I don't want to take something away with me that I don't want.
I will probably cut this part out, the next thing, but the next thing that went through my head is, do you bring your own porta potty so you don't leave anything there?
No, we don't, but we usually go to the bathroom before we get there. It's not often we ever have to do that. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really interesting to recognize how easily you can do that kind of thing. And now the second kind is cursed by others. And that is when you often inadvertently get somebody angry enough that they're willing to place a curse on you. I'll give you an example. A string of bad luck happened to a soccer team called the Socceroos. And they were a national soccer team in Australia. They were doing really well when they asked a witch doctor, of all things, to curse their opponents in Rhodesia in 1969. Now, the next part just boggles my mind. If they honestly thought that this witch doctor could curse this team and it would do something, you would never, I don't understand how they could have come up with this one. They offered him $1,000 to place a curse on their opponent. And then when he asked for the payment after he did the work, they said they didn't have enough money and they only paid him part of what they agreed to. It just boggles my mind. So for years thereafter, they lost their championship games or their games all the time. Fed up with losing, they finally went to the looking for the witch doctor that they had gypped. Found out he had passed away,
That
there was another witch doctor in the area who came to the original stadium where all of this took place and removed the spirit after the ceremony, including an animal sacrifice. The team qualified that year for the World Cup, and they've qualified two more times. But for years and years, they couldn't get anywhere until after they addressed what they had done.
All right, so the logical part in me says, all right, so was it actually a curse, or were the people or were the players involved so guilty about what they did that was a mentally self-imposed penalty?
So I will tell you, there is an element of that, and I hear that quite often, that it's, you know, you basically believe in it, so you become self-fulfilling prophecy. And in this instance, there were a lot of different people involved at the end from the beginning. So people that played soccer for them in the beginning, much like football teams in the United States, they get traded off to other places and stuff like that. So it would have required a level of belief in this by the newer players coming in over the years that was, it would be kind of hard to imagine they all would be able to, you know, be that. But on the other hand, I'm going to do the serpent and the rainbow story, which I was going to not do, but I have to now.
All right. Because of my question, you're going to do this now?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Because it actually addresses the idea of belief. So there was this gentleman whose job was to go to different countries around the world and locate medicinal herbs and bring them back to the United States for pharmacological exploitation. You know, they would look at them, see how they could artificially manufacture them and intensify the results and see what drugs they could create from these particular things. So he was sent to Haiti. And what they wanted to do is explore rumors they had heard that the voodoo priests were able to make zombies. And what had caught their interest was that there was a man who was, it made all the news in Haiti and around the world, it got picked up, about this man who had died about 15 years earlier, and they had buried him. And then years and years go by, and he's in a hospital, and he's not talking, he's almost like he's in a trance or something, and they didn't have any identification, so they put a picture of him on the paper, and his sister saw the picture, and she thought, that's just not possible. But they have more of a belief in this ability to raise the dead and what have you than we do in our culture. So she goes to the hospital, and she says, I would like to see him. There was a scar from an accident that would be very telling and unique. She found the scar, and it was her brother. And after several months in the hospital, he was able to come out of what was going on. And he told this story about how the voodoo priest had buried him. He was alive, but paralyzed, did not have any perceptible breath or heartbeat. The doctors declared him dead. They buried him. And that night, the voodoo priest and his assistant dug him up and continued to give him whatever this drug was. So this is the impetus for this thing, because they're looking at this thinking, this, if this drug is that amazing, it could be the answer for intense pain, surgical issues where people can't take other drugs. There's a lot of realistic applications. This guy was a modern biologist. He was not interested in voodoo. So he volunteered to do this because he didn't buy the crap. And he goes there and he begins to ask around. And he starts, you know, basically he needs to talk to one of some of these voodoo priests, and nobody wants to talk to him. So he goes to a couple of them, and he hires a guy that's a local that can kind of navigate him. And he realizes that there's an element of quackery, showmanship, if you will. But beyond that, things start happening to him. One of the priests takes umbrage with him for what he's trying to do, which is he sees it as desecrating his faith. And he curses him. And thus begins the series of events that become the movie, The Serpent and the Rainbow. And so in that instance, this was a man who completely disbelieved. He was an avowed skeptic who walked away from this saying, I don't even know today what to think about what happened, but this is what happened. And it almost killed him. So that is a curse that was implemented. And with a Westerner who not only did not believe in curses, but thought the entire thing was a bunch of, you know, crap and showmanship, and it was to get people's money, and he wasn't buying into it. Even when it was beginning, even when it was well into it, he was still arguing the logical, you know, thing. And then it just went so far out of control that he didn't have a choice. He finally had to admit there was something going on and seek assistance from someone else who managed to get him in a position where he could leave. And when he left, he wrote the book that becomes The Serpent in the Rainbow. The fascinating study on how curses can happen and how they can impact somebody who doesn't believe it. Because that's always what you hear. Well, you have to believe in the curse, and that's why it works. But in this instance, he didn't believe at all. He still, even at the end of the book, says, I don't know what to believe. I just know this is what happened. So it's a fascinating study. And there are other curses, you know, that are, and there's one called the Tecumseh Curse. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this one, but Tecumseh was a Native American, and he cursed our government, and every 20 years, this country will elect a president who will die. And this continued on for a long time. So he did this in about 1820. Then Harrison died in 1840. Lincoln died in 1860. McKinley died in 1880. Died in 1880. McKinley in 1900. Harding in 1920, Roosevelt 1940, and on and on. And it's only in recent years that it seems to have lifted. But it went on for well over 100 years. So, you know, it was a pattern that he flat out said he was cursing the American government for what they were doing to his people. And it was well known. Then there are generational curses. I've just recently had some input with one of these as well. So there are people whose families are cursed. And a lot of times, in this particular instance, the person, it's going to sound crazy, a ancestor of this particular person agreed to have their family cursed for financial gain. So they agreed that if they were given a certain amount of financial support, make themselves very wealthy, that they would allow the upcoming generations to pay the price.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a really horrible thing to say. And it was the grandfather of the woman I was working with that did this. And since the whole thing began, we have found interesting bits of information that indicate that indeed this was done and indeed there was some foreknowledge. And then he passed it on to his son, who agreed for his wealth to let it go on to his children, and his children are now suffering.
What kind of parent causes their children to suffer for their own gain's sake? I don't get that.
I don't either, but it is exactly what he did. Mm. He agreed to do this so that he could financially become very, very successful. This was a man who did not have a lot of means, who suddenly became very, very successful. And we know exactly how he did it. We know exactly who the people were who assisted him. And we have addressed these issues. And in this instance, every single descendant has a bloodline, and it follows their children's bloodline. So now this particular person, her and her siblings, their children and their children's children have to work with this. So she can clear her bloodline, her and her family, her children and her children's children, but each of her siblings have to be willing to do the same thing or they'll continue the curse. It's like a spider web. And it's really tough. And sometimes people are willing to make these deals because they're pushing it down the road and they see the gain and they think, well, you know, it's not really going to happen. People have free will, you know, or in this instance, it was a significant amount of money and prestige and they were okay with what happened because they sold them their family out.
It's like putting a price on your own child's head. You know, I'm just flabbergasted by that. I mean, I can't get my head around that. I mean, you've heard the phrase, you're like, I'd walk over my mother to get a plate of shrimp or something like that. But yeah. You know, people jokingly say something like that. But that's, to actually do it, that's another thing altogether.
It is indeed. And as of now, 3 generations have agreed to it. 1 member of each generation for 3 generations. But we've addressed it with the other 2 siblings in this generation. So that, you know, and I have to say that at some level, we've actually encountered the fact that it became almost like a fear. If you rock the boat, bad things will happen to your own children. So at least, I don't know about the second generation so much, but the third generation, it seems more like they agreed to it because the other option was that it would fall on their children and their children would die. So they were letting their siblings' children catch it instead.
Even so, nieces, nephews, what?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's insane, but it is what it is, and there's nothing you can do about it except generationally, each person individually has to clean their bloodline. And it's a process that we figured out. And then once the first person did it and it was successful, that person went to their siblings, attempted. One sibling was absolutely excited by it. He was like, oh my gosh, this makes everything make sense. And it did in his life. And then the other one totally rejected it. And that's whenever things started to get filled in as to why they rejected it, is because they had allowed it, because they were afraid if they didn't allow it to continue on through them, that their children would die. Which makes it no less painful, but it is, as you know, it is what it is, and I could see that fear. Other curses like this, there's one called the Tichborne Dole. It's an old English tradition that the Tichborne family would donate a large amount of money of food to the poor every year. So Lady Mabella Tichborne, who was very adamant about helping the poor, laid a curse on whomever broke this tradition in her family. If the food's not donated, the family would have a generation of 7 sons, then 7 daughters, and the family name would die out. In 1796, the family stopped doling, that's how that that all came into being, doling out the food to the local poor. And they did so because they said that people were abusing the privilege. By 1803, part of the family collapsed. One branch of the tree produced seven sons. And one of those brothers had seven daughters. And this, several of those brothers died, and the dole was reinstated. The only brother that was left managed to carry on the family name, and they continue it all now for the same reason. They're afraid to stop. And then there's a possible curse. And I think it's famous enough that it's worth mentioning, the Kennedy curse. So there, the Kennedy family has long been rumored to have had a curse attached to them from back in Ireland. And obviously the family has lost a lot of people. Every generation, their best and their brightest seem to come just to the cusp of ultimate success. And then they are killed or plunged into disrepute, or something happens. And with Ted Kennedy, after the Chappaquiddick thing, he actually said aloud that he could not help but wonder if there was truth to the idea of the family being cursed. And of course, that's before he lost two of his brothers, and, you know, and on and on and on. So it's a very sad, you know, group of losses. Some people attribute... Sorry, go ahead.
I said, it doesn't always have to be tragic. I mean, it can be, you know, frightening, whatever. You've told the story previously about the Zoot Suit Man.
Yes, and how he kind of follows the family. And then there are collective curses. So these are like an area is cursed, or people who did something is cursed. So a good example of that is there is a village that in 1893 were hit by diphtheria. That's not amazing news. There was diphtheria going around at that time, and it took out a lot of people. So and there's a place called the Pier Cheney Cemetery, and there's a whole list of diphtheria victims carved into stone there. A few years later, after the diphtheria had ended, it is believed that it came back, the diphtheria came back, and it came back supposedly because there was a young woman in the area who got pregnant, and they drove her out of town, and they killed her for her sin, and that she cursed the families that lived there. There are stories that they accused her of being a witch and they murdered her, but it's most likely they drove her out and she starved to death is probably the most likely thing that happened to her. There's that whole area where all of this happened is also absolutely rife with ghost stories and paranormal stuff. But upon her death, diphtheria suddenly made a mysterious return to the village, and the village felt themselves cursed because it took a long time for them to get through the process. Every place else was doing much better, but the diphtheria just kept reappearing over and over for quite a long time. And there are others, you know, in 1525, the Archbishop of Glasgow cursed the River people. They were a border community that were sometimes, when they moved the limits of Scotland and the limits of England and they switched the borders around, this poor town, these people in this little town, they kept getting moved around. So like they were being told, oh, you're Scottish and now you're English and now you're Scottish and now you're English. And I guess they were frustrated about the whole thing. So at some point they stole a bunch of sheep and cattle from the archbishop in the area. So he cursed them. He cursed their heads, their teeth, their hair, and their mouths, and calling for thunder and lightning to rain down upon them. Eventually, the river people and their descendants pretty much died out. There's a few descendants left that settled in the city of Carlisle, but there's no doubt that the people seem to just not fare well after the curse. And interestingly enough, 383 words of the curse were actually carved into stone and have been found. And the area where this happened has experienced outbreaks of hoof foot and mouth disease, floods, fires, and job losses like no place else in the whole region. So it's just been a really difficult place to live. And they believe in some respects that the ground is cursed and anyone who lives there suffers for it. And of course, then there's Pele's curse, which is the goddess in Hawaii. Then if you take anything from the volcano area, that she will, if you don't make a good trade, she will come and haunt you. And there's a lot of stories of that too, much like the rocks for Mark. But she haunts you until you take them back. She literally will curse you until you such time as you bring them back. There are cursed objects. We had mentioned the Hope Diamond. So basically, I'll give a really, this is a diamond that has been considered cursed for quite a long time. In the 1660s, there was a French gem dealer whose last name was Tavernier, and he bought this really beautiful diamond. It came out, they don't know where it came from, he found it and was presented to him somewhere along his journey in India. And those who have owned it throughout the years have been told that it was cursed. The reason being that supposedly it was stolen from the statue of a Hindu goddess, and it had been given to her as a sacrifice. And that when someone stole it and then sold it, she made sure that it was cursed. This people who've had it have died unexpectedly. They have had the worst luck, lost fortunes, all kinds of stuff. So in 1839, the diamond was, it ended up with Henry Philip Hope. He was a Dutch collector of jewels in London. And after having a lot of negative events in his life, he decided to donate it. So it sits in the Smithsonian now, where people can see it.
And I have, yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm told it's lovely. It's absolutely amazing. And I'm going to end our last curse that I'm going to talk about. And this is kind of a funny one, because I wanted to end on a kind of funny note. So I don't know how many people know about the Chicago Cubs and the goat curse. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar?
To a certain degree, I knew for the longest time, you know, that you don't ignore a 100-year dry spell.
No. So fans of the Cubs would push a goat in a cart out onto Wrigley Field before the start of the 2017 opener against Los Angeles Dodgers. And the reason is because in 1945, a tavern owner by the name of Billy Goat Sianis, his real name was William, but Billy Goat Sianis was prevented from taking his pet goat to the Chicago's Wrigley Field to see the Cubs play the Detroit Tigers in the World Series. Now, this guy, Sianis, was the biggest fan. And everybody in town knew this goat was his pet, and he took it everywhere with him, and he never had a problem. But because this was the World Series, they got real serious about it, and they wouldn't let him go in, so he cursed them. He cursed the Cubs. And like you said, for 100 years, they didn't win any championships. And after they pushed the goat out in 2017, they have not had so much trouble. They've won a couple. But they were doing that to let them know that the goat was welcome here now. So when I said about talking about the things, you have to weigh what you say, weigh what you do, think about your motivations when things. It's so easy to get angry because we're taught words have no meaning. Everything in our culture is about how words have no meaning. And yet they do, sometimes inadvertently, and sometimes you deliberately do it. You know, the whole premise of the book Thinner, which was later a movie, mm-hmm. was that somebody, he didn't start out to kill that old gypsy lady. He hit her by accident, but he didn't render aid, and she cursed him. And nobody believes in that stuff, so... You know, why would anybody believe that either? Now, that's a piece of fiction, but there are literally hundreds of these stories out there if you look for them. And unfortunately, recently, in the last 2 years, several have walked through my door, literally, or called me and said, I really need help. I don't know what else to do. How do I? Let me tell you my story. And then they start. And that's not the first thing I think of, I assure you, but it is something that I have come to, and we have worked on how to deal with this. And when these people have gotten through to the other side and they felt that it was better, it was interesting to watch how their lives changed and how their fortunes changed. And I'm not saying they all got rich, but I mean, like, they were happier, or their kids were happier, and they made peace with things that they were restless about in their lives in ways that they had not anticipated. And in one instance, the one about the generational curse with the man who kind of traded it out to his kids, two of the three current set of siblings have found a great deal of relief and explanation for what has happened. And they're working very hard to keep it, to break it down, to get rid of it, to make sure it doesn't touch their children and their children's children, so that this ends in their generation and it doesn't follow through for anyone else. So when you're thinking about things, when you're talking about things, oh, I hate this person, I really wish they would, be careful what you say. Careful what your motivations are. Negative energy from negative emotions, greed, lust. You know, a lot of people want to plant curses on people they either couldn't get date, or people that they lost because the relationship didn't work or whatever. And envy, all these things, they don't bring anything good. And I didn't tell it here because it's a story I've told before, but I do have the story that I've told before about my grandmother and my oldest aunt who was cursed, and that they had to figure out how to break that curse because, you know, it was set up because of envy. That was all it was, just jealousy, pure jealousy. So just think about what you say. Think about what you do. Think about the impact you make on other people. Maybe start weighing your words and don't talk so much, but talk well. With that, I'm done.
Oh, so you're not going to tell us about the mitigation?
Well, that
is that still ongoing, and you don't want to?
Well, here's the reason I'm not going to tell you right now, because it's different in every case, mm-hmm. to a large extent. So if I could tell you, you do this, 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 and it always works, I'd be happy to share. But unfortunately, I have to figure out how it attached and what it's going to take to untangle it. So it takes somebody with some talent in that realm. And that's the reason I'm not telling you. I wish it was that simple.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's not. I have like literally 25 different methods that I have read about so far, some of which I've used and some of which I haven't. And twice, none of them seem to look right. So I just went with my gut. And so far, that's worked.
Yeah, I would trust your guts.
Yeah, I usually do. I have to. But I hope everybody found this interesting, and you think back over your life of, you know, what have I done? And don't forget, if you put something out on other people, it'll come back at you eventually. You know, hurting other people never does anything good for you.
All right, then. Yeah. Well, subscribers, listeners, guests, if you have enjoyed Patty's stories today, as I have, and you're watching on YouTube, please consider clicking the subscribe button that's below. Click the bell so you get notified whenever we release new content, which we've been pretty good lately about doing every Friday evening. And if you check on Facebook, you can check out our Facebook groups. We have the Paranormalist Podcast, the Paranormal Group Share, and there's also the Paranormal Asylum. I'm sorry, is that correct?
Yeah, yes, Paranormal correct. Asylum.
Yeah, it's everything is down below. We got links for everything down below. Oh.
Well, hello.
It's been a while since Cassie's made an appearance.
So. It has.
Okay. And we also have the email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. Send your questions, your comments, your whatever you'd like to send us. You know, that would be great. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, I think I'm done too.
Good night, Stu.